Okay, this is the hour. We'll take your phone calls as well with Timothy Alberino as we talk about his work. And it's fascinating, isn't it? Super soldiers. Next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Timothy Alberino with us, of course. Timothy, are other countries progressing at the same kind of rate we are developing this high technology, these super soldiers?
Yeah, I think at least a handful of them are. I think that the United Kingdom is. I think that Russia is. And I think that China is. Probably Israel as well. And, of course, it varies. You get into a very convoluted situation where you have to talk about which non-human factions each of these countries are working with. So it gets very tricky to try and figure out who's doing what. I mean, one of the most interesting questions to me is what about off-world installations such as on the moon or on Mars? I mean, how does that work? Because that's not really territory belonging to any specific nation. So there could be veritable wars that are taking place off-world, let's say on the moon, for example, where most of this technology is being deployed. We may not see it. It's not very likely that we're going to see our saucer technology deployed to stop ISIS, but we certainly have it, and we're certainly fighting somebody. There's no doubt about it. We're fighting somebody. I don't know if at this point, behind the scenes, all of these developed nations that have this reverse engineered technology are fighting together against one singular enemy, or if they're fighting with each other backed by different groups. It's very, very, again, very convoluted situation.
Let's talk a little bit about your work at the Amazon before we go to calls, Timothy. What did you do there?
Well, I was doing a number of different things in the Amazon. When I was 19 years old, I sort of went there just to sojourn. And I was pretty much kicked out of high school. And so I like to think that I got my college degree living in the Amazon, because I really did. I got a very different perspective on life and very real interaction with what people might consider paranormal kind of stuff. In the beginning, I was just traveling around as a young man. There's a whole story connected to that, which I don't have time to tell tonight. But later on, I was doing business, was running a company in Peru. I married, my wife is from Cleveland, Ohio. That's where I'm originally from.
Okay, sure.
And we moved to Peru to, we're running a business.
Anything strange, paranormal activities out there?
Oh, yeah. people who are skeptical about the paranormal just need to move to a third world country, and that will cure them of their skepticism.
Well, how come? Why?
I don't, George, I don't understand exactly the dynamics that are involved, but when you get, for example, when you get out into some of the communities in the Amazon, the paranormal is the normal. I mean, it's and people can write off the different stories, the different tales that the indigenous people tell, for example, about the different entities that are in the jungle, the different entities that live in the water, the different spirits and the paranormal activity. But if you live there long enough, you find out really quick that a lot of the stories are true, absolutely true. And I was mentioning before that I've had a lot of interaction with shamans. And again, when I say interaction, what I really mean is confrontation, because we were also running a prayer ministry in Peru. People might consider what we were doing in the lines of missionary work, some of what we were doing. And I had a lot of confrontation with shamans, and I can tell you that it's very real what goes on. The people who are serious about the occult, they don't play at the occult. It's for real. It's a life and death situation. But even besides that, even besides the shamans and the occult stuff, just the bizarre activity that happens in some of these places. I was in a particular place in Peru, not far from Chachapoyas, and it was a cloud forest. And in Peru, and in different parts of the Andes, they have these very bizarre forests called cloud forests. Very unique because they're literally in clouds for most of the time. So they're very moist, probably one of the strangest places I've ever been. And I was staying with, me and a friend of mine were staying in the priestly quarters of a Catholic church. And the priest invited us to dinner one evening. And it was him and some nuns. And they began to tell us all kinds of stories concerning paranormal activity in the area. And this is a priest and the nuns. And one of the strangest things that happened routinely in this community was that they would find one of their cows up in the top of a tree. And this is something that was
amazing. No footprints, nothing, no tracks.
Nothing, just alive, up, sometimes dead, but most of the time alive.
Trying to figure out, how'd I get up here and how am I getting down?
Exactly. And, of course, the people, they say that there's these entities that basically mess with them and will take their cattle and put this. So they'll literally be up there suspended on some of the bigger branches. And this is the priest, and the nuns were telling me this. And so my friend and I, we had a chance to go hike into the cloud forest. We actually were going to see some Indian ruins, a graveyard out there. And the priest told us about this place, that there's a lot of activity there and there's very strange things that happen there. People go missing there all the time. He told us especially a lot of foreigners come because there's supposedly gold up there or something like that. I tell you, it was one of the most bizarre things I've ever experienced, just getting up there and then being up there. You talk about paranormal activity. I mean, it was very active up in the cloud forest. Both myself and my friend individually experienced some very real scary things while we were out in those forests.
All right, let's go to some of the phones here. Let us start by going to Joe in Claremont, Florida, east of the Rockies. Joseph, go ahead.
Hi, great to be talking with you. First-time caller, a long-time listener, George.
Great.
And I have something very in common with your guest, Timothy. I grew up in North Olmsted, Ohio, right on the other side of the valley from NASA and Cleveland Hopkins Airport. And I was probably a long-time member of the Cleveland Ufology Project. And I know Marianne Hawk, and I talk to her regularly, and I met Stanton Friedman, I talk to occasionally. And just like to say, there's the strangest things that have happened. I've had sightings, and the strangest of things that have happened in the Cleveland area, especially around NASA, and my growing up, and the things I'm going to put into my book when I get to write it here. Anyways, I was wondering, are you a member of the Cleveland Ufology Project, Timothy?
No, I'm not. I wasn't even aware of it.
What? Tell us about that.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's called CUP, or Cleveland Ufology Project, and you could look it up online. There's directions. They have monthly meetings at Tri-C, Cuyahoga Community College. And they go over all the local sightings, and there used to be a guy that was, he passed away, Earl Neff, a great radio person, talking about the subject matter for years in Cleveland. And the things he told me are probably couldn't repeat on air. So, but I'd like to say that, and I guess I'll get off, and great thing talking with you. You're a great guest. Most of George's guests. And great talking with you, George.
Okay, Joe, thank you. Good to have you part of the program. Timothy, when you put together your analysis report, which is on Steve's website, tell me the basis of that investigative report.
Well, we basically try and cover the material, a lot of the material that's in Steve's books. So anything that has to do with giants, anything that has to do with even UFOs, aliens, Nazi stuff. I just did one that's going up tomorrow on deep underground military bases, focusing on the testimony of Phil Schneider, for example, and
yeah.
the time before that, I did the Super Soldiers one.
The late Phil Schneider, right?
The late Phil Schneider, yep. And then we've done some things. I've done the Book of Enoch. I'm going to be doing the Book of the Giants. So pretty much we stay in the realm of Steve Quayle type stuff with the analysis.
What do you think of his thoughts on giants?
I think Steve is the foremost expert on giants, hands down. I'll tell you this, it's fascinating working with Steve. Steve Quayle is the real deal. I mean, he's one of the most honest, forthright people I've ever met. And Steve has a lot more information than he talks about on the air. And his knowledge of the giants and of a lot of things, but especially the giants, is second to none. And it's been a real adventure because we're actually, my background in Peru and then connecting with Steve, it's a very interesting situation because obviously you know about the elongated skulls and the prophet
yeah.
skulls and there's a lot of artifacts in Peru, that point to the existence of giants and of Nephilim. So it's a very interesting mix, Steve's knowledge and my background in the jungle in Peru and understanding a lot of the Peruvian history and some of the paranormal type stuff going on down there.
Okay, let's go next to Pam in Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, Pamela, go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering if you could give me some examples of what happened to you in the cloud forest. That was kind of intriguing.
Yeah, I can tell you that I was basically, I'm trying to think how to explain this. It's very difficult. Basically, I was confronted by an entity that spoke to me audibly, and that was the first time that's ever happened to me in my life. That's not something that that happens on a regular basis, but it was a very tangible, audible encounter. My friend, I don't know what happened to him, but something happened to him, and he wouldn't talk about it. And he made it to the runes. I didn't. So it would be difficult to go into any more detail than I have to be ambiguous about that because it's a very drawn out story to give all the details.
End time prophecy, Timothy. Do you think we're in it now?
The time is definitely winding down. Yes, I don't know how far into it we are. Again, I referenced before the coming genetic revolution. I think it's crucial. That's a pivotal issue in the midst of all of it, and we haven't yet entered into the genetic revolution. So I think we've got some years to go yet before this whole thing winds down.
Let's go to Keith in Rochester, New York now. Keith, go ahead.
Happened to the promise of superconductivity, which at the very least is going to be needed to build these robots. Even a country like Japan that should have been pushing forward on superconductivity has let it slide by. A lot of this is just not being pushed forward. And over the years, I've kept in touch with a Chinese-American researcher in Texas, and he's keenly disappointed that all the promise from the Reagan years, the 80s, of superconductivity, we could have had a much better excellence in our materials building if superconductivity had been fully embraced. And I'm just wondering, you seem to know about the robotics and everything. We're going to need superconductivity. Whatever happened to that?
Like many things, it went underground. A lot of the technologies that surfaced in the past, such as the RAND Corporation's project for the train system that could go, and this comes from the RAND documents, that could go coast to coast in 21 minutes. There's a lot of projects like that that seemingly disappear. Well, they don't disappear. They go underground. They go in black budgets. So I think that what you're describing is probably was developed years and years and years ago for military application and behind the scenes.
Superconductivity, by the way, to those who don't know what that is, it's zero electrical resistance and the expulsion of magnetic fields that occur when certain materials are cooled below a certain critical temperature. And what does that do, though, Timothy, to things?
Excuse me?
What does that do?
With the superconductivity?
Yeah.
You know, I really don't know, George. I have no idea. I think that there's something that that's very difficult for us. It's that they're dealing with, the people who are working in the black projects are dealing with different mathematics than we do. I mean, they've got a whole separate set of physics, and so even to try and wrap our heads around some of the stuff that they're doing, it's literally impossible because we don't have the equations.
Let's go to Jackie in Tumwater, Washington now, west of the Rockies. Jackie, go ahead.
Hi. Hi, Timothy. Hi, George.
Hi.
I wanted to talk about what you were saying about genetics and the super soldiers, because I thought I'd read something. Well, actually, I did read. I'm not sure what magazine. I thought was like Popular Science a couple of years ago. And they were talking about a super soldier they were building. And it was, as far as the genetics of, say, like the Steve Austin type $6 billion man, who was a super athlete type genetics, and mixing it with robotics. But the thing that I found really amazing is that they said that they had taken the gene of a silverback gorilla and introduced it into this man, who also is, you know, beefed up with robotics and whatnot, and I wondered if you'd heard about that. I know it sounds wild, but that's what I read.
No, I have not. What about you, Tim?
No, I have heard about them doing experimentation crossing chimps and humans, but never a silverback gorilla. But it wouldn't surprise me.
The island of Dr. Moreau. They're simply mixing too many things. They're making humans and animals together. I think that's dangerous. Isn't Mother Nature going to put its foot down?
Well, yeah, I think ultimately the author of life himself, God, is going to put his foot down. I don't think that God appreciates us tampering with the original design. I mean, everything that we make,
including foods.
Exactly. I mean, look what we've done with foods. We think we're making it better, and ultimately, it just causes more cancer and heartache and death.
You can track Timothy, by the way, by going to Steve Quayle's website. Steve's Quayle's website is STEVEQUAYLE. Now, can we also get you on YouTube, Tim?
Yes, you can just type in the Alberino analysis on YouTube, or you can just type in Tim Alberino or Timothy Alberino, and you'll find me on YouTube as well. We have a YouTube channel for Steve's website. It's called Genesis 6 Giants.
Super. Favorite subject, occult, biblical prophecy, genetics, ufology, what is it?
I think it's just a mix of all those. I think they're all very closely related, so they all have to do with each other. You can't really understand one without the other.
Tim, we're going to come back in just a moment with you here on Coast to Coast AM. We'll take some final phone calls. And those of you who continue want to just like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, just go to coasttocoastam.com. We're up there in the far right-hand corner. Just click those icons. On our next Coast to Coast program, Dr. Stephen Schwartz joins us as we talk about global consciousness and ESP. Looking forward to that. And, of course, we'll have some breaking stories for you as well. We're going to come back in a moment with Timothy Alberino. We'll take some final phone calls. Those of you on hold, we'll get right to you on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Timothy Alberino with us. Tim, you've got your own theory about non-human entities, including aliens. Tell me about that.
Well, that's a very loaded subject. basically, in a nutshell, if I can put it in a nutshell, I think that there's a lot of confusion around the alien question and these entities that people are encountering, because sometimes they appear to be physical, other times they appear to be more ethereal. And so I have a postulation concerning that, and it basically follows the biblical narrative that you have beings that are what I call ethereal beings, such as angels, archangels, and archons, and fallen angels, beings that are superior, far superior to us, that basically can move freely between all the different dimensions and they're not tied down to a carnal level like we are, to a carnal body. And then all the way on the other side of that spectrum, you have entities that are carnal like us, that I believe are indigenous creatures, the indigenous sentience living on the earth. I think they're from a pre-Adamic time. And so, and then you have everything in between. You have what I call quasi-ethereals, entities that are in between those. And those quasi, what I refer to as quasi-ethereals, are entities that have come as a result of the whole Genesis 6 scenario. The whole idea of the gods mingling with men and creating, and with beasts and creating hybrids. And so, in a nutshell, basically, the reason why, in my opinion, some of these entities seem to be more supernatural, more multidimensional, and then other ones, for example, like the one that the late Phil Schneider shot and killed a couple of them under the ground, are very corporeal, very material and physical. And there's a lot of confusion in that sometimes you're dealing with very physical entities, and other times sure. you're dealing with very ethereal. Again, it's a very loaded question, and it would it would take a very long time even to really explain it to myself.
You've even looked, of course, and you've worked with cryptozoology. Do you think Bigfoot is one of these type of
Absolutely.
Creatures?
Yeah. Absolutely. I would say that Bigfoot, mermaids, fairies, that those are what I call quasi-ethereals. In other words, they come from the genetics of the archons, of the angels. That's why they have access to different dimensions. That's why they can appear and disappear, a lot of these entities. But yet at the same time, they're material. They leave footprints, and in some cases they kill people and can be killed. So there's obviously something going on here between dimensions, and it's a very, very fascinating subject.
All right, back to the phones we go. Mike in Auburn, Washington on the Wild Card line. Michael, go ahead.
Hi there, George. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, Mike. Thanks.
And how you doing, Timothy?
Doing very well, thank you.
Yeah, my girlfriend wanted me to ask you, you mentioned earlier that there was a difference between Lucifer and the devil, if you wanted to clarify that.
Well, that depends on what your worldview, what your paradigm is. I was referring to the Luciferian, particularly the Luciferian paradigm. Luciferianism is the oldest religion on the planet, if you have a biblical paradigm, if you believe in the narrative of the Bible. And so Luciferians do not believe that Lucifer is this evil entity with big horns and a grotesque entity. They believe that Lucifer is a light bringer, that he's a beautiful being, and that the devil is referring to something else. That's not necessarily my own viewpoint. I was just explaining what the Luciferian worldview is concerning the devil.
All right, more calls. Robert's in Victorville, California now. Robert, you're up with us. Go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good.
It's kind of a comment and a question that goes together. There's a lot of, amateur astronomers on YouTube and everything now, and they film the moon a lot. And I've seen this one where it actually showed a UFO come out of a crater. It was the shadow side of the crater and leave the moon. And my question was, the public is getting all this, their own technology, and they're starting to see things on their own. And I was just wondering if you think that the government is going to have to come out and disclose some of this stuff because they're not going to be able to hide it as well as they used to in the past. And I'll take your thoughts.
All right. Well, we talked a little bit earlier, Timothy, about disclosure, but specifically, who do you think is going to disclose, government or whistleblowers?
Well, the caller makes a good point. You know, we have technology now that's available in stores that we can actually keep an eye on the moon ourselves. We don't have to rely on NASA. So
True.
Eventually, whether the government or whistleblowers do it, I think slowly it's just going to sort of seep into the general consciousness of the people. There's going to be too many videos coming out, too much proof, too many eyewitness accounts. So I don't know if the government's going to try and get out in front of this thing or not. I don't know. I personally believe that, just like the caller is alluding to, I think it is inevitable because of the technology that we all have access to.
You think we'll get better perfected robots for space travel and we'll do away with even sending humans?
Yeah, I think we're already doing that. I think the little space probes that NASA shows us is, you know, are basically just toys. It's a dog and pony show. I think we've got some very advanced robotics moving around on Mars already and on the moon.
Much more than they have told us?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. NASA's notorious for not being 100% truthful. Let's just put it that way.
Matthew in Alabama, welcome to the show. Matthew, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey, Matt.
How y'all doing tonight?
Good. Thanks.
Okay. I wanted to share an experience with you and your guest, if y'all didn't mind.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes, sir. This is a true story. It happened in 2008. I was going to see my girlfriend, right? And, I leave my house and start going down the road. I get to a Carolina community, to a local small community around here. And there's a cotton field out to the right. So I look out to the cotton field, and I see a bright white light in the sky. And I think it's a helicopter, you know? I'm used to seeing helicopters with the spotlights and stuff.
Yeah.
But as I get a little bit closer, I notice that it's a triangle. And this was in the daytime, George. It was probably about an hour before dark. And got a good look at it, man. It was a silver triangle with three white lights on the bottom and a red light in the center. And I was looking at it, and I was like, how is that thing flying so slow? Because it was flying very slow. And I was like, that should be falling out of the sky. And I came over my car, and I just went off and up above the treetop level, and I lost it on down the road. It went behind the trees.
Probably out of this world, no doubt. Timothy, of all the kinds of reports we get, how many are man-made as opposed to ET-related?
At this point, I don't know. Obviously, 20 years ago, it was probably more alien-related. At this point, who knows? I mean, I think we've got fleets of saucers, not just us. So I think a lot of what we see is ours. Not everything, obviously, but a good deal of it. I don't think we can cloak our technology as well as they can.
Last week I had Stan Deowan, you know Stan, and we were talking about the Garden of Eden. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's really the root of everything that's happening, as I alluded to before. Really, what the Garden of Eden was all about, what Lucifer offered to Eve, was what's known as, what's called apotheosis. And apotheosis means to ascend, to become a god. And that's really tying that into all of the super soldier and all of the super soldier technology and the humanity 2.0 and mankind 2.0. That's where this is all going. At the heart of it all is really, you asked me what was really behind it. Well, one of the things that's really behind all of this, one of the primary fires in the background that's burning in the hearts of these people who are doing a lot of what's going on the earth, is immortality. You know, you can be a Rothschild and have all the money in the world, but unless you do something, really quick, you're going to die. And when I say do something, I mean figure out a way to suspend your consciousness or something like that.
Sure.
So they're working on that stuff feverishly behind the scenes, feverishly, cloning, all kinds of stuff, because, frankly, they don't want to die. They believe that they're supposed to become gods, apotheosize.
Yeah, they want to go as long as they can. Bob is in El Paso, Texas now. Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering, first off, the superconductivity that the guy was asking
yeah.
about, that's been overridden by since the 90s by anti-gravity technology. The military don't even mess with superconductivity no more. But what I was calling about was the Land Warrior program. That's what I worked on when I was in the Army till about 2002. And I was wondering if he knew anything about that. By the time I got done, we had the glasses and the helmets that had HUD displays in them that we could tie into the drones, and we could get real-time pictures from above. And we had ordnance that you could lock on to with a 50. We had Barrett 50s, and you could literally lock in with that computer with the ordnance that we had that went into the 50 and hit 10, 12 targets at a time, even through concrete walls.
Wow.
Wow, that's amazing. I hadn't heard of that.
I mean, we had bullets, 50 caliber bullets, that were essentially computer-controlled smart bombs that we could launch from the Barrett 50 that had been modified. And you could see all of that in your heads-up display. You could set the weapon down, anchor it to the ground with two, like, tent stakes, and then fire it by the helmet. You didn't even have to be holding it.
That is great technology. I mean, they're so far ahead of where we are. At what point do you think mankind says, we want to know all this stuff, Tim? Tell us the answers.
That's a good question. That's a good question. I think that pretty soon we're going to get to a point where the people are going to be demanding some of the technology, because it's going to become evident. It's going to start to become evident, I think, little by little. Before I forget, George, Steve Quayle wrote a book called Xenogenesis, Changing Men into Monsters. For the listeners who are wanting to learn more about super soldiers and genetics and robotics, Steve really covers all of the bases in Xenogenesis. It's a fascinating book, and that you can get that on his website. But yeah, I think that for lack of a better term, I think the toys are going to start coming out of the closet pretty soon.
I think
we're going to see some stuff on the battlefield pretty soon, maybe in the next five.
Well, they've got to start using this.
Yep.
Let's go to Sean in Kansas City, Missouri. Sean, go ahead.
How we doing, George?
Good, sir. Good.
Awesome show. You guys need a TV show to get more exposure.
Well, we got a little one called Beyond Belief.
I know, it's incredible. I mean, all day, every day. Anyway, I saw a craft. It was actually back in 85, me and my ex-wife. And it had some yellow, low-glowing lights. We were in a park, headed on the way home, you know, Lover's Lane. And anyway, we looked up, and this craft was coming, and it stopped 100 foot off the ground, 4 football fields away. I know that because there's 4 football fields. We got out of the car, jumped, started running right towards it. Didn't make a sound. We got halfway there and said, what are we doing? Stopped in our tracks.
Went the other
Jumped back in the car, and it started going back where it came from without a sound. Followed it for about a mile down the road. Didn't really get a good shape out of it. It was so dark. But we saw all these tracking planes for hours just going back and forth trying to find it, I guess.
What do you think it was?
Well, I know it wasn't human, but I saw another craft. There was 3 cylinder orbs. They were translucent. And this was about 2 years ago in Kansas City, about 2 miles from that same sighting. They actually stopped. I could actually sit there and just stand there and watch them. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was like something you see in a movie.
Let's check in with Tim on this. Tim, what do you think they want? If they're extraterrestrial in origin, what do they want?
Well, I think that they are in direct collusion. I don't believe, this is my opinion, I don't believe that there are any benevolent aliens. I don't believe that there are. I think that...
Yeah, they're not out for our good, that's for sure.
No, I do not think so. And I think that ultimately they're following the command of the devil, for a lack of a better way to explain it. I mean, that's ultimate. I think it is demonically driven. The whole thing is demonically driven, and I think that's borne out in the abductions and in a lot of the different scenarios and stories that have come out over the years.
Let's go to Jeannie in Redding, California. Jeannie, go ahead.
Hello, hi there. First, I want to say thank you for bringing all of this up. And
you're welcome.
About the Luciferians and that sort of thing, too. A lot of people don't understand that, or they don't know how to put it together. I have 2 questions. One is, you talked about the children and how they could be trained because they're just developing.
Yeah.
So a lot of this could be, you know, R&D and everything with them. Would that possibly apply to these children that have come over the border that are in these camps or in some place? They don't even tell us where they are. They won't allow anybody to go in and see them, even the senators. Could they be being trained by anything up to ISIS, I guess?
You know what? Anything's possible. Anything. Go ahead with your next question.
Okay. Why doesn't anyone use the name that Christ gave to the offspring of Cain that is the Kenites when they talk about the sons of Cain or the sons of Satan? For instance, when he said that you're a murderer and you're the son, or, you know, he was the father of it, and he talks about how they lie. And it tells it in Jude and Matthew, and it's very self-explanatory because Cain was told that he was the offspring, and he would always be, what did they say, a wanderer in a land that's, well, basically the opposite of America. So, for instance, over our northern parallel or in the deserts, too cold to have crops with the abundance like we have here in America, with all the abundance of petroleum and everything. Have you heard of anybody calling them Kenites, as it says in the Bible?
Timothy, 30 seconds. Have you?
I don't know exactly who she's referring to specifically, but yes, I've heard of the whole Kenite theory, and I think there's some credibility to that.
Tim, very quickly, people want to see you, stevequayle.com, right?
Yep.
You got
that's right.
It. All right, good to have you on the program. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Timothy Benall, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, George Knapp, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.